Oh, hello there. Welcome to my holiday cabin in parts unknown for yet another Retronauts holiday special. Now, we've been doing this for about 5 years now, and in that time, we've had a bit of a wolf problem in this winter wasteland, but I'm happy to say that thanks to your Patreon dollars, we have a new friend to help us out. Just give me a second here. Okay, there we go. Say hello to the nice people, Steve.
Hello, I'm Steve, here to detect wolves and wolf-like behavior.
That's right, we've upped surveillance to an unprecedented level, making this holiday at the Retronauts cabin the safest on record. Thanks to Steve's space-age AI, we can now detect wolves up to a 10-foot radius around the Retronauts holiday cabin. It's very futuristic.
Speaking of which, Master, I have detected some shapes approaching. Direct your attention towards the view screen. Zoom. Enhance. Zoom. Enhance. Enhancing zoom.
Steve, I can't see anything. You've zoomed in way too much again.
My apologies. Unzoom. Enhance.
Oh hey, those are my buddies Henry Ray and Dave coming over and risking their lives to talk about bad cartoons all over again. Hey Steve, do me a favor and shut down and don't say anything. The humans are talking now.
But Master, I wanted to have a merry Christmas.
Oh, come on in, guys. How's it going? Thanks for making it all the way out to my holiday cabin. Come on in.
Ah, well, thank you. Yeah.
Sorry about that. Okay, well, I mean, like, this year I really had to increase security because we've had some problems with wolves and maybe a few yetis, so I hope you guys made it past the sentry guns okay, because those are really sensitive this year.
Well, I had a banana cream pie for the yeti, so...
Okay, cool. I did recommend that. So, as always, I like to invite my friends to my holiday cabin in parts unknown for a Christmas-related Retronauts, and this year is no exception. I believe this is the fifth year we've been doing it, and I make it back every year. Some people don't, but this year we're going to be talking about the cartoon, The Adventures of Sonic the Hedgehog. But before I say anything more, I am Bob Mackey, your host. Who else is here today?
Oh, I'm Ray Barnholt. Hi.
And?
Henry Gilbert. Boy.
And I'm Dave Rudden. I was brought here by a hedgehog-drawn sleigh.
Wow. I assume they all just froze to death.
Yes.
Okay.
To be honest,
the Yeti's got the rest.
I really don't know why I keep coming here, because you just make us watch crappy cartoons. And it's
well,
just like there's no presents. Or,
I mean, okay.
Chocolate, sure. I like hot chocolate.
But, I have an entire stack of Mr. Magorium's Wonder Emporium on DVD. You all get to take home one copy. I mean, I gave you that last year, but it makes a great gift for family members. Right.
These ultraviolet codes have been used, I assume.
Oh, yes, yes. I've registered them on several MacBooks. They're only going up in value. So, I wanted to talk today about The Adventures of Sonic the Hedgehog. We're going to be talking about a specific cartoon, Sonic Christmas Blast. But before, I'd like to give a little context about this cartoon. And if you want to watch this episode before you watch the show, you can always pause this. It's online because no one cares about it. It has no value, so no one will ever buy it for money.
Nope.
So just go on to YouTube or whatever. I'm sorry if you think this is advocating piracy, but seriously, I assume you can buy it on Amazon if it'll make you feel better.
It's probably $4 at Walmart right now. It's in a bin somewhere.
$4
it's that time of
year. For all 108 episodes or something, right? So actually, 66. I did my research. So this is not the serious Sonic cartoon, which is also bad, believe it or not. I had to go back and revisit that for US Gamer a while ago. Though Adventures debuted first and ran concurrently with it, and as with the classic syndication style of cartoons, they made 65 episodes, and then they ran them all in 3 months, and that was all you ever got.
Yeah.
So every day you'd see a new episode until around December. So I think it actually ran from September 3rd of 93 to December 3rd of 93. This Christmas special aired much later. We'll get to that in a second. So I want to know, like, did you guys watch this cartoon at all when it was on? And it's okay to say you did, because I did.
Yes. I did, yes, yeah. I actually discovered it on a Thanksgiving day because I was a reader of the first run of Archie comics. Like, I actually owned Archie Sonic number 1, which predated the premiere of the Saturday morning cartoon as well, Sonic AM, as the fans call it. And I was into Sonic AM just because it at least reflected the Archie book. But I also didn't have the afternoons free to watch the Sonic Adventures as a kid. So then it was Thanksgiving break. And then I turn on and see Sonic as his own show. Oh, my God. This is much more hideous and annoying and written for 4-year-olds than Sonic AM, which was aimed at, like, I guess, 9-year-olds.
Really? Right? I mean, so did you turn your nose up at it as a, I'm guessing, 11-year-old?
I did. I did indeed. Yeah, I was 11 at the time. I totally turned my nose up at it because I wanted grown-up, serious, dark cartoons like Sonic AM.
I wanted brooding Sonic.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, like, this is what entertainment was like in the 90s. You would watch something even though you didn't like it just because something else would be on later. Like, I'll suffer through, like, MASH because there's a good episode of, like, the Beverly Hillbillies on next. Yes, that was entertainment in 1992 when I was watching black and white television.
Not me. Still couldn't take MASH.
Oh, man. It's so bad.
I feel like this was Sega's biggest gambit with Sonic, but just besides Sonic himself, just, you know, trying to beat Mario or whatever, because, like, two different cartoons at the same time is kind of crazy, and how got that greenlit or whatever.
Yeah, it feels like in terms of, like, trying to sell things to kids via television, it does feel slightly sketchy where it's like kids will not see anything but Sonic. Like every day of the week there's Sonic, which was kind of like the same thing with the Nintendo cartoons because you got the Mario Super Show all week and then you had Captain N on the weekends, right?
Mm-hmm. Early on, yeah.
Yeah, pretty much. So, Dave, Sonic, this cartoon, did you watch it?
I watched this a lot. It aired before, like, I had to get on the bus to go to school in middle school. So it's like anything that's on that is even remotely funny in, like, the 7 to 8 a.m. Slot, fine.
I'll
watch it. I never watched the other Sonic cartoon, but yeah, this one for a few months and then it was back to Dennis the Menace all the time.
I watched a lot of preschool slot where you're just like, I just need something to concentrate on not going to school. So I think I watched a lot of Littlest Pet Shop and Stunt Dogs and things like that. Like cartoons no one remembers and no one should.
Yeah. Yeah, that's when I watched Gargoyles.
Yeah. Ooh, I love Gargoyles. Right. Did we talk about how, like, where you found the show or did you ever, like, see the show?
Yeah, I did see it. I mean, I did. I was more hyped for the serious one because that was at least on ABC, and I had easier access to that because I didn't exactly know how TV affiliates worked as a kid back then. So it was kind of like a lot of hunting and pecking around to actually find it every so often. And even then, I don't think it was like every day or anything. But
yeah, I mean, this was an era where there were independent stations. I don't know if they still exist because don't they just become a Fox affiliate
or
like
TV.
The CW or whatever? Yeah, but
well, we do have coffee here still, like all in the Bay Area.
Yeah. But I think we talked about this on the Tiny Toons episode in which this whole 65 episode like Blitz idea came about with DuckTales, I think, where they're like, no, we're going to make like basically 3 or 4 seasons worth of cartoon at once and just air it daily instead of just like, okay, we'll air it on Saturday first and then it'll like go into reruns eventually like Scooby-Doo or
really,
whatever.
Really prescient to the Netflix model.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah,
but you couldn't binge.
Yeah, because it took them – I believe it was that Disney wanted to do it first with the Gummy Bear show, but they did wait like the 5 years to animate 13 at a time.
Right, like every Saturday morning. Mm-hmm.
And then they just said, let's just do it all at once. And it was something I got used to. I think it was with Animaniacs when I first noticed, oh, 60, there's just new episode after new episode all the time. And so I got used to them like that. That's how I came to enjoy like Batman Adventures as well. And I realized like, oh, these are – sorry, the animated series. It's called Batman Adventures in the comics.
Oh, okay. It's weird to think that it's like, oh, yeah, 2 years of pre-production and now they just air everything in 3 months and it's over.
But dump it.
I did want to talk about like where the series came from because we are historians in a way. And as far as me, I found the show like for some reason I found myself an animation nerd even back then. I was super keyed into like when cartoons were premiering like, oh, man, the new Disney afternoon cartoons. Kind of this like, right, oh, man, there's Bonkers. That sounds great.
Yeah.
It wasn't, but I watched it all. But yeah, this introduced some characteristics for Sonic that would persist. I mean, they really recast him as a Bugs Bunny type character in this show where he's just like wisecracking. And of course, if you're a wisecracking cartoon character, you need a prop. And that prop is a chili dog, which became like – I don't know. It feels like a very Poochie – and if you don't know who Poochie is from the Simpsons episode, Itchy and Scratchy and Poochie, he is like the personification or the distillation of all the worst 90s tropes to having a quote-unquote cool kids character. So Sonic is very much a Poochie in which – I don't know if he raps in this series, but he like – I think chili dogs is the most radical food for a kid in the 90s.
Which sort of became canonized in Sonic Generations.
That's true. That's right. Yeah. I mean, does new Sonic want chili dogs? Or I guess old Sonic can't talk, and that's why I like him more.
Right. Yeah.
So we basically – Sonic is recast as a very Bugs Bunny type character who like goes into costumes and does voices. And of course, he is voiced by Jaleel White, who was Urkel and hasn't done a whole lot since then. But that feels like a really brave move. He was Urkel – I mean, he was Jaleel White in both Sonic cartoons. Mm-hmm. And it feels like – I don't know if Urkel was hated or loved. I don't know what what our relationship with Urkel was in the 90s, but to cast the coolest character with the voice of the biggest nerd on television feels risky to me. I don't know.
Well, it was still like stunt casting that they – I think they did it for – because obviously everybody else they hired on that show seemed to be like the cheapest Canadian they could find. And they're like, well, but we can advertise Jaleel White as this guy. And
sure.
And maybe it was also like a PR move by him. They're like, have him play – we'll have you play the coolest dude. That'll get away from your I'm the nerdiest guy in the world shtick.
That is true. And I think in later episodes of Family Matters, Jaleel White would play robots and Bruce Lee and
Stefan
more than he would ever play Urkel.
This was peak Urkel. Like, this is when he was like four characters on Family Matters.
For sure.
Yeah, let's get him on Sonic.
And I think it was before Jaleel White was like 7 feet tall with like a giant crotch bulge in his pulled up pants, which made that character slightly uncomfortable as he aged. You know, just like, what am I looking at here?
To be fair, I do think it was a good voice for Sonic.
I think so too. Yeah. And I'm not insulting it. And I was surprised actually when that voice didn't stick around as Sonic's voice in the video games. I feel like it was a Japan thing. Like, I feel like Sonic Adventure, the dubbing in that game was just like, oh, are you in Japan? Can you speak English? You're Sonic.
It is weird how many of the voices in this game sounded like the characters eventually did when they started talking in Sonic Adventure.
Yeah.
And I guess like not Jaleel White. Like, Sonic in the games at least has a slightly lower deeper voice. Not that much deeper.
I'll be honest, I bet the Jaleel White thing was just like money things.
It
like,
could have been money.
This guy is a professional voice actor. He will not take video game voice actor prices.
Yeah.
And he probably wants to work union, that son of a gun.
And actually, I mean, it reminds me of how, again, mentioning Batman, like they had Kevin Conroy. It was a big deal to get Kevin Conroy for the Arkham games. But when they make the cheap Arkham game Origins, they're like, let's just get Roger Craig Smith, who does every video game voice, including Sonic.
To be fair, he does a really good Kevin Conroy, but still, Kevin Conroy is my favorite Batman for sure. I don't know if that's sacrilegious or blasphemous or whatever. But the reason I'm going to so much detail about this show is that the episode we watch does not have a lot of content. But these things are interesting to talk about because one of the key figures, and Dave and Henry will be keyed in on this because we just did a show called Talking Simpsons we're currently doing the show Talking Simpsons, which is on the Laser Time Podcast Network. And we watched a lot of the first season, actually the entire first season, and looking at the really crappy animation. And one of the key artists on this show worked on the first season of The Simpsons. In fact, he directed Some Enchanted Evening, the infamous awful episode. Kent Butterworth, who I feel like horrible outsourced animation failed him because he was basically – he worked on a lot of crap, but he also worked on like Tiny Toons and Ren and Stimpy and things like that as an animation timer and like a layout guy and a character designer. So I don't think he's awful. Mm-hmm. I just think The Simpsons was not right for him. And if you look at the amount of money or the lack of money poured into these episodes, you could see like no matter how talented you are, like some like overworked South Korean guy is not going to care. It's going to be one of the 9 million things he's worked on. He has no context of knowing what it is.
Well, I do see a certain level of like bounciness to the character, or like rubbery bounciness to these people that I did see in Some Enchanted Evening and the original clips. So I can match this up here. Yeah.
I do like the Robotnik design though. I don't know. It's kind of ugly in like a fun Ren and Stimpy way. But he worked on Ren and Stimpy, so I can see like they're trying to get some of the weird, gross designs into this show as well.
Well, as an animation nerd, it's actually like a pet peeve of mine to see characters drawn with like a hot dog nose. Like that. It just grosses me out for some reason.
When
I see that in like old like Felix the Cat cartoons, I'd be like, ugh.
I think the thing that bothered me was that like everything was ill-fitting on Dr. Robotnik, at least in this episode. Like in the games, you're so used to him like looking like he's kind of a fat dude, but he still like dresses nicely. This one, he's just, like, disgusting.
Yeah, I was watching this with my girlfriend, and she was like, I don't get it. Why is he a big, fat slob, but he talks like Sideshow Mel? Like, I will get you, Sonic.
Yeah.
That's Sonic.
That caught me there.
Yeah, it's strange. Yeah. But, of course, like, they would constantly play off how his name kind of sounds like butt in this show. That would be, like, one of the three jokes.
Yeah.
So just going into more about this, there's no one of note who wrote for this show. If you go through IMDb, it's just like, oh, you went through the kids, like, hell mill. Like you went through the cartoon kids cartoon hell mill where you wrote for everything. And man, watching this episode, I'm like, oh, I wish these cartoons were still around. For as much harm as they did to animation, they must have been so easy to write. Like there's nothing that happens in this episode, and just like God, they didn't care.
It hits all the beats of the series. You can tell they were going by the sheet.
Basically. For sure, yeah. And I mean, like if you make a cartoon now, you have to be into animation. You have to be an artist. There are very few writers outside of like the adult animated sitcom thing that are just writers. But yeah, like I feel like the people who were writing these cartoons were not good enough to write sitcoms. Mm-hmm. So they were just roped into this stuff. So like – or people that had wrote sitcoms for 30 years and then were like writing Saved by the Bell before they retired.
Those are a lot of children's entertainment.
Yeah, for sure.
Oh, yeah. I could see them being guys who failed to be a staff writer on a TGIF show, like one of those two-season TGIF shows. And they're like, I can write about a running hedgehog. Who cares?
Yeah. So like what's he like? Bugs Bunny? Sure, I've seen that before. Yeah, and okay, so unlike the serious series, Robotnik is a bumbling elf like we talked about, and we have two henchmen, Scratch and Grounder, who have like the most – like the high default cartoon voice and the low default cartoon voice. And we'll talk about Scratch's voice, but I can't believe I watched that much of that character talking in my lifetime without having my mom abuse me for doing it.
I got to say, like, he was – once I heard him on the episodes I saw as a kid, I was like, nope, I'm done. Like, I can't do this.
I had so much tolerance for that, I guess. So yeah, I mean, and we wouldn't see these designs anywhere else, but for some reason, like when Puyo Puyo came over here, they turned it into Dr. Robotnik's Mean Bean Machine, and we saw Scratch and Grounder in this Robotnik in the game, which was bizarre, but I guess like, hey, why not? Because can't bring Puyo Puyo over as is. It's too cutesy. And I think a lot of you millennials or younger people out there might know this cartoon because people make these things called YouTube poops. Are we aware of this phenomenon?
I am.
It's not even new. It's like I was watching these like 8 years ago or whatever. Mm-hmm. But it's just basically like just like funny – like editing things together in a funny way like Tim and Eric or whatever. Yeah. But they mainly edit these Sonic Says segments, so they are saying the wrong thing. And
I'm more used to seeing ones with Mama Luigi from Mario World.
This
cartoon.
Is also – they do the Wand of Gamelion, the Zelda game.
Gamelot.
Yeah.
Yeah, they do that. I mean, like, and I've seen lots of King of the Hill ones like Boggle. So if you know, if you've seen that one, you know he says Boggle a lot. Yeah, so I guess we should get started. This episode is called Sonic Christmas Blast, and I'll explain that title in a second. It's very convoluted and strange, but the strange thing about this episode is that it aired 3 years after the series came to a close. I don't know what circumstances caused this to be created. Obviously, they still didn't care. It wasn't like, oh man, I've got a great idea for a Christmas show, guys, but it seems like it was engineered to sell a game or to promote a game, which would be Sonic Extreme, and this episode was originally called An Extremely Sonic Christmas, and there are some uses of the word extreme in this episode, which point to that. Yeah, like they couldn't come out and like show you the box, but they were clearly like telling you, oh, come on, kids, you know what's coming out. Yeah. But I'm sure this episode went into production roughly 9 months before the game was supposed to come out. And, Ray, can you tell the story of Sonic Extreme?
Oh, well, can anyone at this point? I mean,
it all started with it. Yeah.
That's convoluted.
Yeah.
But yeah, Sonic Extreme was going to be the big Saturn Sonic game for 96, but development was just like crazy slow and incredibly hampered and hit all these roadblocks and went through like, you know, a couple different studios trying to make this game, all based out of, you know, North America, by the way, because this was like sort of done surreptitiously below Sega of Japan's influence. So they were trying to make this hot Sonic game and it just totally petered out and didn't go anywhere. Mm-hmm. Now people have found more builds and beta evidence of it. And so it's out there now. But basically, the game that did come out for 96 was Sonic 3D Blast, which was for Genesis and Saturn, and then Sonic Blast for Game Gear, which is different. But yeah, all had the same sort of motif on the box and the logo, and so did this cartoon.
Really good soundtrack in that game, but the game, like, does anyone want to play an isometric Sonic game?
No.
Where you collect birds?
I thought I did, and that they had to bring back the, what's the bird that they...
The Flickies.
They loved Flicky. I was like, Flickies? I finally played
it. It's an isometric Flicky game is what it is. Yeah. It's not a Sonic game.
Wow, I never thought of it that way, but you're totally right.
It's the same concept as Flicky.
I had also heard that there was some sort of, like... that Japan was not happy at all about them making Sonic Extreme and partially killed it on that
one. One of the things was that they were going to use the Knights engine for it, but Yuji Naka was like, fuck no.
Yeah, I think they did a lot of work with the Knights engine and he just like shut it down, which is hilarious. Like, yeah. I mean, reading Console Wars lately, last year, you really get a sense of how both sides of the company were like sabotaging each other because the Japanese side was resentful of the American side's success, correct? Mm-hmm.
Which is funny because, you know, two Sonic games were made in America.
Yeah, and it's like, it's all for the good of like the company for real. I mean, it's not like Sega of Japan would shut down and America would still be around, as far as I know.
Also in the book, they made it sound like Yuji Naka hated working with Japanese side too and moved to America to have it easier. But then he shuts down the American one. It's just nuts to me.
He just loves a California sun. That's all.
I remember I got to interview. It was the E3 where they announced the Sonic Lost Worlds game, and I got to interview the creative director on it, who had been working on Sonic games since close to the beginning, Sonic 2. Yeah, I think it was him. Right. Yeah, but the big Sonic fan of my website, he said, "Hey, ask him about Sonic Extreme because this is really similar to Sonic Extreme." And so I asked him that, and he just was like, you know, I've heard people say that. This has nothing to do with Sonic Extreme. We were definitely not inspired by it, and I never even saw that game. I was well, okay. And my friend told me, like, he's lying. He knew what Sonic Extreme was.
Yeah, but you're not going to take inspiration from it for that game.
Yeah. Looking at Sonic Extreme now, I feel like it's probably for the best it didn't come out. Knights was probably the better game, and nothing could have beaten Mario 64 in that race, just in terms of, like, showing people what a new game would look like in this 32/64-bit era. But yeah, we are talking about Sonic Christmas Blast, unfortunately, and this is our very standard like ex-villain has stolen Christmas, kidnapped Santa, I believe. That's what happened in the Mario Brothers Super Show episode we did a few years back for that Christmas special. But what happens in this episode is I don't understand the economy or reality of this world, but people are gathered in the town. It opens with this gathering of Santa's public address or whatever. I guess this is a common thing that happens in Sonic's world.
Kind of dystopian.
And I have to admit, like, as much as I hated Sonic Adventure having like human characters, I forgot they went back this far, like with these hideous, ugly human beings.
Ugh, kid.
With just like a giant row of teeth jutting out of his face, like at a 45-degree angle.
I think it was just that even by 96, there had been so, other than Robotnik, there were no humans in the game.
Yeah.
So they had no real guide to how to draw a person. So, I mean, tons of people just had yellow or purple skin. Like, or they were.
It felt like the same Doug universe.
Yes, Bluffington is next door to Robotropolis or whatever it's called. Yeah. So what happens next is Santa appears on this Jumbotron and he's clearly a robot and he says basically he's quitting and he's giving his job to Robotnik Claus, which probably took about 2 seconds to write. It's like, guys, we haven't had a butt pun in this episode yet. So so Robotnik is basically kind of changing the rules, flipping the table on Christmas. And he's like, no, you give presents to me. And that's basically the whole premise of this episode is like Robotnik reversing the rules of Christmas and just messing with the townspeople. And what did you guys think upon just jumping into this for the first time? Probably in 20 years, I'm guessing. Well, I've never seen this one, I don't think. It was in high school and I was like, I'm not ready for this.
I don't know why there were humans anyway when there should be something. I mean, at least the comics establish it, or the game even establish that Sonic just has other animal friends.
Yeah, it felt like even, Robotnik was like
even the captured animals. Like,
should
imposing. We just have a citizenship of animals?
Maybe animal. No, make it humans. Animals are hard to draw.
I guess so.
Yeah.
That kid, by the way, looks like Slap from Panic. So there's another Sega connection.
Oh wow!
Oh yeah,
that's true.
Oh, he's a hideous kid, but also that he's like. He sucks from the beginning, too, that he's just like, so this is when the Santa gives us toys, right? Or we can tell him when we get toys.
And then he visits Santa, or Santa Robotnik.
Yeah. Thank you.
And when Robotnik asks him, like, what are you going to get me? The kid gets so angry, he starts punching Dr. Robotnik, and I'm like,
punches him in the gut.
That is so rude.
Yeah.
I know this is an evil villain, but you don't know that.
And again, like, even when you're writing a kid's cartoon, you have to be not lazy. And in this scene is incredibly lazy. And, like, every scene is lazy, but it's like, all the kids are in line. It's like, okay, you're lining up to tell Santa Robotnik what you're going to give him. So this should not be a surprise. surprise to this kid because he was told what he was there for.
Yeah.
And I want to say, like, we might sound snide and, like, cynical and sarcastic being, like, 30-somethings making fun of this kids' cartoon from 1996. But there were kids' cartoons in 96 you can go back and watch now, which are completely great and funny, have great animation and music, like Freakazoid and things like that, and Batman. So it was possible for good cartoons to exist in 1996. Mm-hmm. This was not one of them, though.
Well, I think this is, like, below standard. Like, they tried less than even most Christmas cash-ins.
Yeah,
like,
right.
I feel like even the He-Man Christmas special, like, tried a little harder to have some sort of message than this one.
Yeah. There wasn't Sonic Says on this one.
Yeah. No. And then – so – and yeah, and also that Robotnik, like, doesn't put any work into his costume either, not even slightly, which seems like a poor story point for him. Like, his character should be more invested in making a good costume.
Yeah.
Well, like we were saying, I think Robotnik in this show is just sort of like this Frankenstein monster of squash and stretch. Like, he's just supposed to look completely unappealing at all times.
I think they had the most fun drawing him because Sonic and Tails just don't look right ever in any scene.
Oh my God, I forgot about the way they make Sonic blink.
How does that happen? Is it just like a giant, like, single eyelid that falls down? Or
it's like his pupil blinks, but the white space is supposed to be his eyes.
God, I guess that's just one artist interpreting it. Like, what is it supposed to be?
They fixed it in Sonic Underground.
Okay, thank God. Well, man, now I got to watch that whole thing.
Well, and then Sonic always looks like 30 pounds overweight. Or that they just draw
same
him
Mario.
Like,
yeah.
Yeah, it's true. Well, and then that's when we see, like, God, the voice of the chicken robot drives me. I don't even want to, like,
I'm going to stand back on the mic. It's like, everybody get in line.
Yeah.
It's like,
that
just like,
was your idea.
sorry for blowing out the mics, but I couldn't believe.
Toad was totally fine on Super Mario Brothers Super Show.
He made me miss Toad. I was like, I don't know. Toad's at least, he at least tries a Brooklyn accent.
Toad was
or
like
something.
A Harvey Firestein compared to Scratch in this episode. So then we have, we have Scratch, and we promise we will not do another Scratch impression. I will shut these mics down. But so we have Scratch, and then we have the other sidekick who's like the common, what's going on? Like, I feel like that you can't really have that character anymore because of certain things, but it is a very common, like, smart guy, stupid guy character duo, and they're terrible, and they're just a poor man's, they're a poor man's, like, what are they? What are they even?
Well, Bebop and Rocksteady or
something like that, yeah.
Yeah, I guess they are. Bebop and Rocksteady is a good one. They're like, well, they're kind of Fred and Barney-ish, I think. Well, the other one's more Barney.
Yeah, it's like, hey, Scratch, what are we doing today?
Yeah,
Barney has drive.
Yeah. And it's funny because, like, in some scenes, they draw the grounder, the robot, the dumber robot with a butt. They like draw ass cheeks
on
him.
That was distracting, I have to say. The one thing that also annoyed me just is like, just as a base level of animation competency that clearly they wrote in the script, like, and then Grounder grabs them. He's like, you didn't realize, like, he has drill hands.
Yeah.
So then his drill just has to recoil, and then out comes his gripper claw. Like, why doesn't he always have hands? Those drills aren't so useful.
There are so many moments like that, Henry, that I didn't write down, but just was thinking about. Like, this was written by someone who did not understand animation or drawing. It's just like, just draw what I tell you. It's like, I don't even know what these characters are.
There's one point where he's pushing Scratch with his drills, and I'm like, that would pierce his skin and cause
God, if only,
or at least scratch up Scratch. Yeah.
So it's at this point. So we find out what happens. So of course, Robotnik is taking over for Santa. He's demanding presents from children, and like about 5 minutes in, we finally see Sonic, and who else is there but a naked Princess Sally?
Nah.
Yeah, she's always naked.
This is the most insane segment of the cartoon.
It is. I had no idea what it was setting up. Ray, can you talk about what was happening in this segment? This introduction.
The thing is that Sonic is talking to a mute, unresponsive Princess Sally.
Yeah.
But that's not even it, because Princess Sally never showed up in Adventures of Sonic the Hedgehog.
She does not belong in this world.
Yeah, she's from the serious Sonic in the comics.
I believe she's from Knothole or whatever the hell they call it.
So, there's never else been anything close to a link between these two shows otherwise. So it's like, why the hell did they throw her in at obviously the last minute?
Well, and her coloring's all wrong, too. Like, she's pink like she was in the first few issues of Archie Sonic.
And the Sonic CD is... She was in Sonic CD, Sally?
They just renamed Amy.
Oh, okay, got it. But she's got Amy's colors. But what happens is Sonic, she's like, that's right, Sally. That's totally agreed. No presents. And then he runs away and he's like, I have to get Sally a present.
Yeah,
because she always lies to me like a treacherous woman does.
Yeah, that was
when
weird.
A woman says no presents.
Way to teach those kids, Sonic.
Well, I also like that he says, no more words need to be spoken. I was like, is she really not going to talk? Or were you too cheap to hire just one more voice actor?
We can't hire Kath Soucie. She won't come to Canada.
Some equally ignorant you know, exec or boss just walked in the office and was like, hey, what about that Princess Sally? Why isn't she in her? Well, it's like, it's, I thought there was the other cartoon. No, no, no. Shout out Princess Sally, right?
You know, hey, you know how it is on Christmas. Girls are always telling you not to get them gifts and then they get mad when you don't. Like, oh, yeah, that part. Should be in there with
they
Sonic.
They give you a mystical ring.
Kids you know, exactly. know this stuff.
You do feel like this is written by, like, a retiree on his third wife. Like, I gotta stick it to Barbara. So, yeah, so Dave was bringing up this magic ring and so, like, Tails and Sonic run off. Okay.
All right, this magic ring you've had all the time.
Right, right.
This is Chekhov's ring, and so much awkward exposition is dumped on this on this one ring. I do want to point out they're going to Robotropolis, to get presents, but they're like, it's dangerous there, but it's like, but it's just a town full of humans. Like, are they mixing up the continuities again?
Well,
what's happening?
Well, does he own Robotropolis? Yeah. Like, is it, because that... But Robotropolis in AM is, I mean, it's a dystopian, like, machine city. Humans don't live there, but...
And this is just a regular, like, city with people in it, so...
Though, apparently with no real leadership, because they... If Santa Claus's replacement says we get to steal stuff, then you do.
There's no police either, just like in Hill Valley. Yeah. So, there's this really awkward scene in which Sonic and Tails are running and talking about what they're doing, and then Sonic jumps on a tree, and some bird character's like, what's that, Sonic? It's like, oh, this ring? And it's like a huge close-up. It's like, I don't know what these symbols mean, but Sally got it for me. Pay attention, kids. This is going to wrap things up. This is my Deus Ex Machina.
They could afford that bird, but they couldn't afford Sally?
That's true, yeah. It's like, they put the bird's voice in Sally's mouth.
Maybe there was a contract that said Sally can only be voiced by this actress, and they didn't want to hire her. I don't know.
It's weird. But
that bird is terrible too. That it just shows up like, I'm this bird. Wow, Sonic. Goodbye.
I just killed some time.
Whoa, fall down. Thanks for catching me.
Yeah. So that was Sonic save the cat moment. So we know he's a good guy. But this ring is like the Deus Ex Machina ring that will end the episode in an improbable, inexplicable way. Mm-hmm. We'll get to that later. So we have Scratch and Grounder, who we will not do impressions of. They are going door to door, stealing from people. Like even like literally stealing their houses. And then Sonic shows up to stop them, and they essentially just explain what the plot is to Sonic. Like, this is what we did. Oh, I'm sorry. Oops. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to do that impression.
It's all right.
I tried to make it tolerable.
They have to explain everything to Sonic. They're like, you could discover this, but that would take too long. So, look, we're just going to tell you everything.
And go ahead.
I was going to say, the running time of this thing is 20 minutes.
It's about 18 and some change. Yeah. Because the credits are just clips from the episode.
I'm just can you imagine the commercials? How many commercials are running on this?
I hated that as a kid, too, when they would put the clips of the episode as the intro. Like, you're too cheap to get any new intro.
Yeah, I think this aired on USA, so it was probably like 18 commercials for Karate Fighters.
Well, and also I was annoyed that it seems to be a plot point. Oh, the kid is kidnapped and taken to a robot factory.
Yeah.
But then he just shows up like, and I escaped. Really, you couldn't even animate the robot.
I want to see that. Yeah. It could have been like an action scene. Like, I escaped from the deadly robot factory, Sonic. Okay, sure.
Or Sonic could free him and find out the thing from him there. Like, it's just basic story problems on the most rudimentary level. They're making mistakes.
And you could say, like, they're looking down, they're talking down to their audience by regurgitating this plot info, but I really think it's just to kill time. You know, just like, oh, that's another minute. Thank God.
Closer to the grave, And I also was upset at the first commercial break is they're going to drop this thing on Sonic. And even if I was seven, I would thought, Sonic is super fast. Like if there's a thing falling on him and he has the ability to run away, he will. And I was waiting to see, will they do more than that or will he just run away? He just runs away.
Yeah,
like,
that's
all he does.
Yeah, and it's not even that big. It's probably like the size of a bed. And Sonic is so fast he can easily just get out of the way.
Yeah, and it's been over his head for like 5 minutes while they're talking to him. I think so. Like, okay, we're already halfway through this episode because nothing happens in it. And we cut to Robotnik, however you want to say it. He's building a ton of chimneys on his hideout because the plan is, I guess, everyone in the city is going to come down his chimney. I don't know how he's enforcing this. I guess he has a robot army that's trying to kill people. But that's basically it. And I have this note that says, like, all these robot designs are just terrible. It's just a bunch of shapes with a face drawn on it. They look like candy mascots or something like that.
They put no work into that. Yeah. But they could just steal the designs from the games and draw them.
That's the thing is that Scratch and Grounder are already bad designs based on Sonic 2 enemies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so.
True.
Is Scratch a Sonic 2 enemy?
Yeah, well, supposedly.
Okay.
Not very accurate,
I don't remember something being that big.
I always thought Scratch was weird because it's okay for Sonic to attack robots and humans, but other animals is like that. Those are his friends. So why would he attack something like Scratch?
Which, no, Scratch and Grounder are robots.
They are
they
robots.
Oh, right. Apart yeah. and rebuild.
But there's
themselves.
No there's but no Scratch smaller a, yeah. there's no smaller animal inside them though, which I found strange.
Oh yeah. Right.
Well, come on. That was also something like this always bugged me on every Sonic cartoon was that. The thing Sonic does every – like more than anything in any game you play in him is that he jumps on them and it makes them explode. And he like never does that on Sonic Adventures. Like did they just think that was too violent?
Maybe. I guess like if I had to say anything about it, I would say that the people that were making this never played the game and didn't care. And this is like what does this blue thing do? It runs okay? Right, that's it. We'll make it run.
Though that was the one time I actually like laughed during the episode. I thought it was funny the cartoonish megalomania of Robotnik to say, like, more chimneys, more! 1,000 chimneys on my house!
I will agree that is the one, like, halfway good joke in the entire episode. Just the idea behind it. Him, like, like more chimneys equals more people coming into his hideout or whatever.
If I had one chimney, they'd all just get jammed up trying to get in here. I need as many entryways as possible.
So Sonic has to go to – so basically by pretending to be like a sanitation worker, like 2 seconds after – like I don't even know where he goes to change. He like just comes back a second later and he gets where Robotnik's hideout is or where he's keeping Santa, I guess, from Scratch and Grounder.
That was the most Bugs Bunny moment of the entire thing.
That's one of those series Bible beats I was talking about. Sonic needs to dress up as a different character.
Yeah, and Jaleel White is trying his best to do another voice, but it's really not working out for him.
Right.
And he gets the address of the secret Santa jail, I guess, and where the little kid escaped from and a grown man can't, whatever. So there's just a bunch of montage stuff that's not very funny. I was like, oh, good, another montage. I don't have to write any jokes today. It's just Sonic snowboards and runs I got a cigarette. Okay.
We got to do that to earn the some
well,
sort
you're
of
skipping way ahead.
That's
he has to get
spoilers, Dave.
Oh, sorry.
Wow.
Sorry.
You're ruining that.
Yeah, to get to Santa's hideout, like 7 miles south of the North Pole, which it – with whatever, but that then when he gets there, there's I feel like they just cut a scene because he's gonna get shot at by those robots, and I thought, oh, he's gonna do the cartoony thing would be to make them shoot at each other or shoot at him, but they actually accidentally shoot each other. I thought, oh, that's what he's going for. He's like, ready, aim, and fire, and then there's shots of them shooting, but then he's just away, and you don't see what happens with that. They're just like. I guess they missed and then they're not there and he frees Santa.
There's not even a scene or a joke or like a point. It's just like some of these could be gags and like a lot of it's just like I'm gonna destroy you and then make an ice pun or a fire pun.
The closest thing to a gag was when he made the giant cannon and 3 nameless robots fall into the water and then a walrus just pops up like, hey, I'm a walrus.
And it's terribly drawn. I could barely tell it was a walrus. So I assume at this point Sonic finds Santa and basically takes him back to the workshop and tells him Santa tells Sonic, I guess it's all over because there's no way we could recoup
there's
this.
There's one elf that's still there.
Yeah, I guess all the elves were stolen
which
too.
I thought it was the kid for a minute. I'm like,
well, right. They are both hideous.
I saw this. I always remember this joke from Dr. Katz. So I forgot who told it. But yeah, it is every Christmas special. Gets to the point of Santa saying, well, I guess there won't be Christmas this year.
I know.
And that is exactly what happened.
Yeah, I think it happened in the Mario show until like Toad cried or whatever. It's like, Toad, you've moved me.
Right.
I've never felt this way ever.
But this version of Santa is just so defeatist. Like he spends there are multiple scenes where he says, well, can't happen. Sorry.
Look at what you can accomplish, Santa. Yeah. You can't fix this?
Yeah.
That's my question.
Robotnik is just too cunning.
Yeah. So here's where the ring comes back again. Santa Santa's like, like Henry said, it won't be Christmas this year. And Santa's like, that ring, Sonic, and the ring just appears on his finger because it hasn't been there for the entire episode. He's like, I've seen those symbols before, Sonic. Come with me. And it's like, I guess there's a symbol. The symbol that's on Sonic's ring was also carved into the wall where Santa was being imprisoned.
Right.
And there's this weird, like, prophecy that comes into the show.
Ancient runes.
In the Act 3. Somebody explain this to me.
No.
Well, that,
no. Well, it can't be explained. Try.
Sorry.
Well, Hank, it is like 20 degrees below zero out there.
I know.
I don't blame you.
I've had hypothermia this whole time.
Get some vapor rub.
No. Okay. So the extreme laziness really got to me there, too, of just like they knew the ring was going to come into like it was going to be important. Could they at least in just the 30 seconds before it's introduced draw it on there then? No. Like only – when Santa recognizes the ring, do they draw it on
there? That would cost money. That's extra pencil mileage, Henry. Yeah.
But they're going to have to draw the ring anyway. There just should have been one person who said, we've got to establish the ring right before this. We can't just
go off model with this one thing.
Yeah. You know what, though? I picture like the writing staff of Sonic the Hedgehog, this cartoon, as the kind of guys that take off their wedding rings every time they go to bars.
Just takes it off all the time.
Why would he wear it?
And also comparing the Santa to other Santas, like he says, oh, we have to steal back 1 million presents and then give them out. That'll take till July. Like, no, it is accepted that Santa has magic gifts in one night powers. So if you can just give other specials like this one, like in Pac-Man, they basically say, oh, if Santa could fly, he'd be able to do it. If you just give Santa and get him back to zero and just have like, okay, Santa, this is the normal Santa setup, you can do this stuff. But this time Santa's like, even if you got it to me, it'd take too long. Like, really,
you
Santa?
You can't start applying logic to the Santa Claus equation when you need to fix something. It's just like, no, you can do anything basically, so you should just do it.
They didn't even draw reindeer in this. Not one reindeer.
Well, in the beginning, like when Santa Claus pulled up on his sleigh, it was like reindeer, but it was like the cell was being slid across the frame. Like they didn't even move. There was no animation. Just like whoop. So what happens next, and it is inexplicable, but I'll try to explain it. It's basically there's these symbols on the wall that explain that if you do these challenges that are related to the ring, you unlock the power of ultimate velocity.
Or just collect 7 Chaos Emeralds.
Yeah, I mean, exactly. That's what I was thinking. Like, you have a thing in your game that would make sense in this context, but it's like, oh, no, Sonic, he collects rings. Does he wear them too? I guess. Sure, why not?
Again, like, they don't know the canon.
Like, Sonic the Hedgehog, brought to you by Zales.
They have no idea what the canon of Sonic is, so they're not going to bother with that. But also, like, they barely even make it mystical. Like, well, you have to do these two things. Just these two things? And could we at least, like, see magic energy get instilled in them? No.
Again,
like,
20 minutes.
It's never clear. So what happens is I have here written down another joke-free montage in which Sonic is, like, snowboarding and, like, he's, like, basically doing a triathlon.
Yeah, he's going through these trials.
Yeah.
That was the inspiration for Sonic Freeriders.
Freeriders? Oh, was that the
The Kinect snowboarding game starring Sonic.
Jesus.
So this was – I don't know. I didn't watch – I can't remember a lot of the older Sonic cartoons, but was this like the first time that Sonic used a means of conveyance that was slower than Sonic?
No, there's a snowboard stage in like Sonic 3, I think it was. Like,
yeah. I think this was probably pre-Sonic 3. I think Sonic 3 was like spring 94. So,
no, this was 96.
Oh, right. Yeah. You're right. Yeah. But I'm sure Sonic in the old cartoon did like ride bikes or whatever. I don't know. He drove.
The part where he like hang glides off a floating log in the air, like it just is – there's no physics or anything to this. I just would have been I feel like if I was the age that I should have been to see this, I would have been disappointed just how lazy these extreme things were.
Yeah,
that Sonic has no trouble with them. That just bothered me.
Yeah,
like, these are trials.
Yeah, here's the thing is that entire sequence is totally humorless. Like we said, it's like you could fit a couple other physical gags in here, I thought, maybe. Mm-hmm.
Or make him, like Dave was saying, make him do something that's outlandish, not like what you'd see on ESPN 3 or something. Mm-hmm.
Instead, it's just Sonic gasping at some obstacle and then goes right around.
Yeah.
I guess there were gags in the Scratch and Grounder, like set up Wile E. Coyote type things a couple times.
Sure.
They failed.
They're animated so poorly, I didn't understand one of them. Like, they're in the snow and then a bear trap, went off, but they weren't in it.
That felt also like, we don't want to animate this. Like, look, the bear trap pops out of the snow and just assume they got crushed.
Listen, you try drawing it, buddy.
They are solid metal robots, and when a snowboard falls on them, it crushes them. Like, what? What is Sonic Snowboard made out of?
It's made out of the Chaos Emerald byproduct, I guess.
And that's the last time you see them, too.
Yeah.
And it's, yeah.
Oh, yes.
And this episode, and we're almost at the end, like, what happens? And we've been complaining about this, but, like, he does these challenges, and it's just like, oh, I guess I have this power now. Like, there's no, like voice from the Sonic, you've done it.
Yeah.
You have my power. Yeah. But,
or him saying, like, or the ring's glowing. I feel imbued with extra power. Or, like, this is the fastest I've ever run before. This is amazing. Like, none of that. It's just so lazy.
It is. And he just, like, they're just, like, two scenes where he just, like, zips around the world and just fixes everything.
Yeah.
And,
That drove me crazy, too, that they don't even set up the, like, Sonic's already pretty fast.
Yeah.
But this is, like, he moves at light speed and... Can he always run at light speed now? Like, they didn't say it only lasts for one night or something. This prophecy is very vague.
And in doing this, I also wrote down, like, he passive-aggressively just drops, like, a boatload of gifts on Sally. Like, there's your gifts.
There you go.
Now
shut
kiss
up.
Me.
Don't say a word. I have to run out. Like, we'd have to pay you if you said anything.
And also, you only see the back of Sally's head, and she also is just motionless and completely unresponsive.
Yeah.
And like he even kisses this motionless, unresponsive Sally.
It's Princess Sally post-lobotomy, like, I guess.
That also takes me back to, like,
it's a mannequin.
Just the opening where he says, when a princess says she doesn't want any gifts, that means you give her two stores full of them. Like, that's such a that's a terrible lesson to give children. At least in Sonic Game, like, Sally is a very stereotypical spunky princess, and she would definitely be the type who says, "No, seriously, Sonic, don't buy me shit. Like, I don't need things. I'm a freedom fighter. And I lead.
There's
people.
A war going on.
Yeah.
We need to be practical, Sonic.
I only
gave
you this ring to save Christmas.
Yeah. I like to think Sally is just going to stay in that reality because it's much safer for her. It's like,
stop blowing the rebel funds at Macy's.
I'm sick of that French guy. I want to just get away from him. What a creep.
Or Stacy's, or what did they call
Stacy's.
It?
Stacy's. Oh, yeah. Was that a joke?
I guess it was.
Like, it was supposed to be like Macy's, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
I don't remember. I don't even know what my joke
was. There were two visual jokes in that. That was one of them. And, like, at Robotnik's, I think we're at Santa's headquarters, there's a water tower, and it said the word H-O. Ho, and then there was like a three, like cube, like ho, ho, ho. Way to go, guys.
Hey, that at least constitutes a joke, which this show barely has, even though it's supposed to be the gag Sonic that's goofier and for kids.
I can see on the table in the writing room, like 101, like, holiday gut busters or whatever. Like, I mean, pick three of these and get them in the show. So, yeah, Christmas is saved inexplicably through this act of God, I guess. And it's inferred, and this is canon, everybody, that Sonic is a new Santa because Santa does retire. He's like, screw this. Why am I working if this blue guy can do it in like 2 seconds?
Right.
And
that infuriated me the most of the entire episode, that, like, they're – Santa, it changes the reality that, like, Santa exists in all these things. And I feel like if any other one, if Santa said, you know, you do this better than me, Pac-Man / Mario / Q-Bert, then they'd have the humility to say, no, Santa, I couldn't possibly take this job from you. The world needs Santa Claus.
But Sonic's just dumbfounded.
And also, it's like, well, I guess I am Santa Claus now and have an extreme – like, it's horrible.
He says have an extremely good Christmas every day because Sonic only recognizes kids who accepted Jesus as their personal savior. That's right. He doesn't care about Hanukkah.
Well, I also felt – okay, so to get deep into this, I feel the theme of this episode is, like, borderline blasphemous in that – presents really are what matters. Like, there's nothing
right.
That in it is the opposite of the Grinch stole Christmas. The Grinch steals Christmas, and then people, like, they don't even flinch at it. The Who's of Whoville, like, nah, we still have each other. We love each other. But Christmas is ruined by losing things, and Sonic has to get all the things back to people. And once the little boy sees the hideous little boy sees all his gifts are back, he's like, finally, Christmas is better. I have things. Yeah. Yay!
Well, ostensibly, this show is made to promote a video game. So it's like, remember, kids, things are important, and women need to get off your case about Christmas.
Yeah, there's barely any, like, there's no families in this, really.
Oh, yeah.
Like, Sonic only talks to two people.
And that kid has no name.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Sonic just has to get stuff to people. Like, that's the difference. It's the Super Mario Super Show special is not good. Like, it's not good either. But at the very least, they tried to say, be unselfish. Toad was unselfish, and even though he wanted this present the whole time, he gives his present to Santa so he can give something to him.
Yeah.
And it teaches you, like, maybe it's not just about material possessions on the holidays, but in this one, it's like, it definitely is, and Sonic will be there to make sure you get your things, and this other guy won't steal all your things. You'll get your stuff.
And like in terms of, like, we're going way too deep on this, but I like it. But in terms of, like, conflict, it was also boring because Sonic had no problem at any time doing anything. The little kid just escaped from the robot factory.
Yeah.
And, like, there was never a problem. Like, you just need, like, it was like, oh, how's Sonic going to get out of this one? Outside of the gift dropping on his head or whatever. That was the only time it seemed like, oh, maybe something bad could happen.
It's never in danger.
Yeah.
And I also, if I were rewriting this, I would just say, like, this whole ring thing is pointless. Like, this is just filler. Just have him fight Robotnik at the end. Like, don't – this completely removes my Robotnik. Have him fight him in his gift factory.
They don't even, like, face off. He just, like, zips around in the room and then leaves. And there's no ultimate, like, battle.
He could just take his stuff back.
Yeah,
the ring thing is the filler of, like, oh, this is the big action set piece, these stunts. When it could be him invading the evil Santa factory, and obviously that seems a lot more expensive and difficult to animate.
Yeah, right. For sure. I'm sure they were like, what can we draw? And let's figure it out from there.
But I could and not – yeah, it was awful. That ring thing – terrible.
That nameless little kid also annoyed me because, like, I think he was just there to express, like how the audience should be feeling. Like, right. Christmas is ruined. That's bad.
Yeah.
I'm so sad. Like, lines like that. Like, we don't need that.
Santa would never do that.
Yeah.
I won't get any fine Sega products for Christmas.
That was the finale, the series finale 3 years after the fact for the – it's not even The Adventures of Sonic the Hedgehog. It's just Adventures of Sonic the Hedgehog, which is weird to me. I need an article there, buddy. So, man, I'm sorry I made you walk all the way out here, Hank. I know you're sick.
I'm sorry. I apologize, everyone.
I wish you weren't so far off from civilization, though. But
I'll just go outside and just die in the snow.
Die in a dignified position. That's what I – that's my advice. So, like, any final thoughts on this? Like, I feel bad for me as a child because I watch a lot of this trash, and it is trash. It is opportunistic, cynical trash, and I'm sorry if you enjoyed it, but please go back and you'll realize, like, it's important to realize before you're on your deathbed how much time you wasted. And I've gotten over it, and I think you need to, too. And if you want to watch this, it's on YouTube, and if you want to pay for it, Godspeed. Because no one deserves any money for this product. Anybody, what do you think about this? Do you regret it? Are you embarrassed? Did you watch it privately? I just want to know what's happening.
I had a lingering question, which is why did Santa have these big, thick Coke bottle glasses?
That is true.
He looked like an elderly Cyril Sneer.
Would it be harder to draw him blinking, I guess?
It's like we can only do one set of eyes in every scene. That's it.
Yeah.
I think of that also that, like, a fake robot eyeball popped out of the Santa when it was crushed.
Yeah.
The robot Santa. I was like, but he doesn't have eyes. He has fake glasses.
He's got, like, Milhouse glasses.
This doesn't make any sense. So this is the lowest of the low for – like, I've watched the Pac-Man one. I've watched the Mario one. Yeah. Like, this is way worse.
Yeah. Is this on the Cartoon Christmas website?
Yeah. Okay. Our friend Chris Santista did do a Cartoon Christmas for this, and I think he felt as poorly about this as we did.
Is that a cartoonchristmas.com?
I believe
so.
Okay,
I have to check that out. Yeah. I like that site a lot. Dave, anybody else want to chime in on this? Thoughts?
Otherwise, I was going to say it's very fitting that this also, like Sonic Extreme, had a very troubled creation.
Troubled? How so?
it's bad.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I assume everyone got along making it because they're like, we're making garbage.
Maybe.
We know what we're doing.
Yeah. Maybe. I'm sure they were working from like a coffee-stained three-year-old Sonic Adventure series Bible.
I did like the jingle bells across the normal Sonic theme at the beginning.
Oh, yeah, that's right. The theme for this one is like dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun. Yeah, that's
a little bit of like the traditional.
That was
it,
yeah.
Oh, yeah, I think, yeah, okay. So the music was the most... salvageable part of this, I guess. Yeah.
I guess. I don't know. Like, yeah, that at the same time, there was that Sonic anime that's not much better, to be honest, but at least it looks way better.
It looks good, and they put Knuckles in a cowboy hat for some reason.
That was
I don't know.
So strange.
Right. Yeah. A weird owl character, but yeah, that was Sonic. That was Adventures of Sonic the Hedgehog episode. Sonic Christmas Blast, formerly titled Extremely Sonic Christmas or whatever the hell. If you want to find this, like I said, YouTube or go to a dollar store because you can probably get the entire series for like, they'll just give it to you. They'll just throw it in your bag. So get this out of the store along with these mutilated Barbies. Let's take a brief break and then come back and talk about some of our favorite Christmas memories and maybe something else. So I've given everyone their copy of Mr. Megorium's Wonder Emporium. Remember, don't cash in those ultraviolet codes because I'm selling MacBooks with that movie on them, and they're selling like hotcakes, boys. So what I want to know is, and I think I've said this on previous special before, but maybe I'll reiterate what mine is. But I did ask you guys before you came out here, and you probably had a lot of time thinking when you were trudging up that mountain. But what were your favorite Christmases in terms of video games? Not in terms of family moments and togetherness, but in terms of sheer product, because this is what this episode's about, isn't it? It's like when was like just like you were the N64 kid, you know? When was that? I want to know. Let's start with Ray. How about you?
Yeah, well, it's a little bit weird for me because I usually – after a while, I was so into video games, I would usually get things around when they came out. So I think I'll just cheap out here and just say like the very first Christmas when I got an NES, I think in 88, which is exactly what I wanted, and I got the games I wanted, which is RC Pro-Am. And my story, as I've probably mentioned before on the show years ago maybe, is that, you know, the first game I played was like Duck Hunt, and I didn't like Mario that much. But, I got RC Pro-Am, which had cars in it, so that was good. But then, man, that game is tough, so I never really got far in it.
It is pretty tough.
But that was a big one, big crucial one.
Mine would be, after 1995, that was when I started buying them myself or just saving up the money. And also that if, for 96, I got the N64 around release date because my birthday is in September. Mm-hmm. So I just saved the money and bought it. But 95, that was when we got a Saturn for Christmas. We got a Sega Saturn, me and my brother, and it was a special day because we got to set it up in the living room. Like, you know what? We get to use it on the big 32-inch TV and play in the living room.
Yeah.
Did your parents – were your parents one of those parents that thought, like, that'll ruin the TV? A lot of parents were like that.
They were like that. But also they didn't want all those cords and wires, like, choking up the front. Because also me and my brother were – very messy, but it is a very like uniting memory that we set it up and we turn on Virtual Cop, and my dad, like, he never goes my dad is a gun owner, but he never really goes hunting or puts it to any use, so I didn't know what kind of shot he was. But then with the light gun, he was just like popping off like justice shot after justice shot just from the hip. I was like, it reminded me, I had forgotten that he was awesome at Duck Hunt when right. he first got the NES. And so
if he goes back in time, he can wow them like Marty McFly did,
yeah,
right?
He totally could.
Where'd you learn that? My living room.
Yeah, he was great at it. That's one of the very rare moments of remembering, like, oh, my dad did like some video games like that, and RBI Baseball, played a lot of that.
Sure. Yeah.
How about you, Dave? Good Christmas.
For me, it would have to be, I think it was 1991. I remember going to a Toys R Us with my mom, and I don't know why she brought me in the first place, but this was when Super Nintendo and Genesis were fighting it out, and TurboGrafx was kind of just seeding the market. So it was on sale for $60, and I saw like the tag for it, and I begged my mom. I'm like, get me a TurboGrafx-16. It's so cheap. It I'll totally love it. And pretty much got to a point where I was throwing a tantrum because she wouldn't say then and there, yes, I will buy you a TurboGrafx-16, son. So I threw a fit.
It is the only game console with Zach Morris on the box.
Yeah.
Look at that console, folks, really? And tell me that's not Zach Morris. It really isn't, but it looks like him. Sorry, go ahead.
But then on a Christmas Day, lo and behold, I get a Super Nintendo. And on top of that, my mother tells me when you go to your aunt's house later on, your godmother will also be there, and she bought you a Super Nintendo game. And I had in my mind, like, I'm going to get Super WrestleMania. This is going to be so great. And I got Desert Strike, which, okay. like – It was a game like I got it and I felt like, ugh, I wanted Super WrestleMania. But then that was a game I played a ton of, and I probably never would have given that series a chance if I had just like mm-hmm. gotten something else that year.
Yeah, it could have been a lot worse.
Yeah, it was in holiday season where I had my mind set on completely different things, but I ended up getting things that were pretty great.
Hmm.
Yeah,
cool.
So that one.
That's funny. I also got my TurboGrafx at that $60 blowout price.
Yeah.
Except I got it with my own money because it was just that cheap.
Was that in late 91 maybe or something?
No,
like that?
This is like, I think for me it was like 93.
Okay, well, yeah.
Because it came with like Bonk's Revenge.
Mine is actually, I probably said this before in an earlier one, so please forgive me, but I think Christmas of 92 because I went for the TurboGrafx instead of the SNES or Genesis. For my birthday in May of 91, I got one. And,
well, what did it for you?
I think it was all the VHS tapes NEC sent to my house.
Okay.
Where it's like, look at these games, everybody. Yeah. It's like, wow, I can't actually look at videos of other games, so this is really something.
So it wasn't any one game, just the barrage of advertising?
Yeah, with like slightly offensive narrator doing different voices. But
did you fill out the response card?
Oh, I filled out every response card, pretty much. But yeah, so I got that in 91. I wasn't completely crushed by it, but I was like, you know what? I kind of want a Super Nintendo. So I mean, my story's not that exciting. I asked for one, and then I got it. But I'm kind of surprised. Like, we were like an upper, lower, middle class family. So I'm kind of surprised. Like, I got a console in 91, and then another one in 92. My parents spoiled me a little bit, I guess. So yeah, I got that in Street Fighter. So I love Super Nintendo so much. I also wanted to ask you guys about your favorite winter theme levels in video games. It can even be Christmas themed if you want, but that's something I've lived here for 5 years in California, and I used to live in northeastern Ohio where it was like both extremes, where it was like deadly hot in the summer and basically don't leave the house in the winter. And that's basically why I like video games, because you're basically trapped inside for half the year in those places with seasons, at least if you're a wuss like me. So anybody want to jump in? Like, what is your favorite winter theme levels? Because I do miss seeing snow, and I kind of use these to like recreate like seasons and things like that, like video games.
Well, to keep things relevant, I believe 2000, I really enjoyed the Sonic Adventure DLC where you could put Christmas trees all over Station Square.
Oh, that was cool.
And then they would also play the a cappella Christmas Nights theme.
Oh, love that.
Wow.
So for like a couple minutes, what I would do is just like stare at the tree in first person while the music played, and that was like our Christmas tree.
Well, maybe we'll go out on that. I like that song.
I just love that slow, super serious, like, in a dream I can see.
It feels like the end of a Disney movie.
Totally.
Like the credits are going up.
And no,
like,
I mean, they
a whole new world.
They were like, this should be Peebo Bryson singing this song. But Christmas Nights.
It's a standard now for us, for our generation.
Yeah. Christmas Nights is up there for me. But actually, my favorite that I wrote down is I love 2D Mario winter levels in general. But my favorites are in Yoshi's Island, like Yoshi's Island World 5, like specifically I believe it's called Danger Icy Conditions Ahead. And that's the one with The little snowmen on skis that are flying around. Like,
oh, yeah.
I just love those cute snowmen. And then also that you are given the fire watermelon or whatever in this in those stages a lot just to melt stuff. So the mix of the hot and the cold is just it's fun. I like that.
That game is phenomenal. Dave, you have any favorites in terms of like winter theme levels?
It's not a level really, but in Shenmue when it would turn to Christmas, that was always nice to go through like the town square and just see like stores setting up for holidays and things like that. Because I think it was like, unless you were super good at that game, you would at least go to Christmas because I think it took place in it started in October.
Yeah. Did you have to figure out – did you have to do something by Christmas or – I know there was a time limit.
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought it was like by January or something.
Yeah, something like that.
I just remember hugging his lady interest – his love interest in the snow.
Yes,
like, I remember that bit.
Mm.
Yeah.
Also, runner-up Grubbins on Ice, which was a DLC add-on to – Costume Quest.
That's right.
And Costume Quest, like, I really liked. It came out right around Halloween and kind of, like, got in that spirit. And then this DLC came out right before Christmas. And it's still, like, you're still trick-or-treating, but it was, like, you're doing it in, like, a big wintry place. So that was fun.
I haven't played that DLC, but I did like Costume Quest for what it was. As for me, I think I said this before, but I love Narsh in Final Fantasy VI. I was also very, very impressed by the snow effects in Donkey Kong Country. Like those ice levels and snow levels were great, even though I'll admit it's not a fantastic game, but I do like
the music helps.
The music is great.
Yeah, definitely.
Oh, yeah. Like I'm sure you'll hear some of it for the millionth time in one of these specials. So yeah.
It's a rule of thumb for Donkey Kong Country, really.
Yeah.
By the way, Dave, just as a friend and because I listen to you every week, it is Shenmue.
Wow.
I've told him that too.
Shenmue.
I had a Japanese teacher who would say Shenmue. So my pronunciation is all
But another question, is it one word or two?
What?
No, is it one word or two, Shenmue?
Well, it's a Chinese word. So
when it's written in English.
No, it's one. Yeah.
Oh, okay. I always have to look it up whenever I write it, which is not that often. But yeah, that was our Christmas special. Thanks, guys, so much for coming all the way out here. Usually these episodes
ended on that note.
Yeah. A correction.
That's your gift for Christmas.
But you're gonna make us leave out into the snow?
Yeah. I mean, I want you guys to stay, but there's only so much oxygen in this cabin, and I'm not going out there. I mean, I'm gonna be helicoptered away after the holiday's over. But you guys just follow the trail, stay away from the guns, and Godspeed. I'll let you plug things in case, you know, you don't make it back. People can remember you that way. So as for me and all of our Retronauts stuff, you can find us on Twitter, Facebook, SoundCloud, Twitch.tv, YouTube, and our blog, Retronauts.com. Also, we're being hosted by US Gamer, so go there every week to see a blog post, and it'll tell you what we talked about, what music we used, and the links to things we talked about as well. And also, please keep the reviews going. They always help. Go to iTunes Music Store. Just let us know what you think. Even just give us some stars. That helps us increase our rank and defeat bigwigs like Rooster Teeth. We're coming for you. You and your teeth. And I'm also doing another podcast, which is currently in the second season. It's called Talking Simpsons. And what we do is every week we talk about a new episode of The Simpsons in order. It's not a commentary. It's a companion piece. And Dave is on it. And Henry's on it. And I hope Ray will be on it soon.
Sure.
That's an open invitation, although it's not my house. So please go to lasertimepodcast.com and check it out. It's called Talking Simpsons. And if you don't want to go to the website, just go into whatever podcast program you use and type in Talking Simpsons. Remember, we're not weird Talking Simpsons. Those guys are Australian. So if you hear Australians and talk about like Vegemite and dingoes.
You guys won't be talking about Australia for another like 3 or 4 years.
That's true. We've probably only once. And I'm also Bob Servo on Twitter. Man, that's a lot of plugs. Thanks for sitting through this, guys. Everybody else, jump in. Ray, where can we find you? What are you doing these days?
I hardly have any plugs anymore. I'm RDBAAAA on Twitter. And then I also have a podcast called No More Whoppers.
Where can we find that?
NoMoreWhoppers.tumblr.com. It's just me BSing with my friend Alex, who's also been on this show.
And as Bob talked all about, like, Dave and I are both part of the Laser Time Podcast Network, and if you want to hear the first season of Talking Simpsons, that's a great excuse to support us through our Patreon, patreon.com/lasertime. You get $5 a month, you get a bunch of extras. $10 a month, you get even more. $5 gets you access to the first season of Talking Simpsons. And I also have a podcast of my own that I host, which is Cape Crisis, the comic book podcast on the Laser Time Network, where we talk about all the big weekly events in comic books.
I believe you probably talked about the Sonic comics before.
Very lightly, yeah. I think most with Game Informer's Tim Turry, because he was still reading, well, he had picked them back up for the Mega Man crossover in Archie.
Right. Yeah, I'm Dave Rudden on Twitter. And I host the Cheap Popcast. It's a wrestling podcast on the Laser Time Network, but I do just about every other podcast on that too with Henry and Chris and everyone
including
else.
The video game themed one, Vigigame Apocalypse, hosted by Michael Raparez.
That's a good one. So that's it for our special, guys. Have a happy holiday, whatever way you celebrate, and we'll see you next time. And guys, good luck on your trip down. And let me know if you see Jeremy, because he was invited too.
Oh, no.
Oh boy.
So cold.
We'll see you next week, guys. Later.
Lights, please. And there were in the same country shepherds, abiding in the field, keeping watch over their flock by night. And, lo, the angel of the Lord came upon them, and the glory of the Lord shone round about them. And they were sore afraid. And the angel said unto them, Fear not, for, behold, I bring you tidings of great joy, which shall be to all my people. For unto you is born this day in the city of David a Savior, which is Christ, the Lord. And this shall be a sign unto you. Ye shall find the babe wrapped in swaddling clothes, lying in a manger. And suddenly, there was with the angel a multitude of the heavenly host praising God, and saying, Glory to God in the highest, and on earth peace, and goodwill toward men. That's what Christmas is all about, Charlie Brown.
Hark the herald angels sing,
that, and getting absolutely wrecked.